Are we anywhere close to being ready? And as the music fades, we are back once more with the Unsalted Popcorn Podcast. We've moved on from Doctor Who. We decided in our infinite wisdom to talk about Star Wars. We're already seriously regretting our decision. Over there, sipping the wine, keeping the cat out of the way and keeping Morgan under control is John. And over on the other side of the room, winding me up and pretending we're talking about a different film, is of course the lovely Laura.
Hi, can't wait to talk about Citizen Kane today.
Do you know what?
Amazed that John managed to get Morgan to sit through it.
Yeah.
That is quite impressive, to be fair. I mean, have you seen the Zack Snyder cut of Citizen Kane?
Yeah, don't introduce me.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, sorry. I forgot. Oh, and now sulking and hating me is, of course, the wonderful Morgan.
She's a teenager. Should I find another reason?
True.
Yeah. To be honest, being alive is the reason most people can't stand me. Right. So, yeah. So we're watching the Citizen Kane of animated Star Wars films. I mean, genuinely, whose bright idea was this?
Well, to stick Clone Wars in there?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let me just go back down through the through our messages, shall I, and see whose fault this actually was. Shall we do that? Because I'm more than prepared to do that. I'm more prepared to sift back through several months' worth of messages to see just who is responsible for us watching this.
If it means we haven't got to talk about this, I'm in.
If it's either me or Kat. And I think I asked the question, are we going to put the Clone Wars in? And then Khan said yes.
I don't believe I did. Or I may have done, but I hadn't watched it at that point, and I'm now regretting my life choices. I mean, should we just talk randomly about it first, or should we just dive straight in and get this shit over with?
Let's dive straight in, because I'm sure that some of our thoughts, of the film will probably be made quite explicit in the next hour or so.
I think it'll take about 30 seconds.
Do we think? Or shall we just do a proper deep dive in, as we've been doing, scene by scene?
I can't bring myself to. It's horrible. I mean, my first observations, as we do take our deep dive in, unless there was something amiss with the version I was watching, and I don't think there was some kind of weird 60s Saturday morning TV excited voiceover thing at the start.
Yes.
Yes. Which I like. Very, 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 very much so. You have been watching Wacky Races, and I've been poached from that.
If they'd been trying to catch a pigeon, I'd have been on board. I would have understood what was going on. But for some reason, we suddenly had to get this, now in the universe. Fuck, shut up.
Catch the baby Jabba. It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Catch the Jabba. They call him Stinky Stinky Catch the Jabba. It could work. Sorry, John, you were going to actually say you liked it.
Do you know, I did. I like it, but I like it in the context of the subsequent TV series. Because at the beginning of every episode, you have this kind of voice kind of going, war is doing, and such and such. And it kind of it basically serves the purpose of previously and such, or gives you a kind of quick. It also, I think, is reminiscent of the, for some reason, it reminds me of the old kind of half hour kind of Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon type stuff, where you used to have this kind of what's happening, and it had that kind of. And it also reminded me slightly of the kind of old war show reels that you used to get.
Yeah, I mean, it did. I think
that's the vibe they were going for.
Well, this is
I don't think it works as well in the movie, but it works well in the little 20-minute episodes.
Because that's the thought that crossed my mind. Because, I mean, if you go back and watch Indiana Jones and the endless sequels of Doom... clearly, he was recreating those Saturday morning TV adventures of his youth.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine. That's what they are, and that's good. But this seemed to be that bit writ large and taken to an extreme and didn't really gel with what had gone before. If the other Star Wars films had been in that same vein, then I think it would have worked.
Can you imagine? hang on. Where's the opening crawl of episode four? Hang on a second.
Are we going to do this? Are we going to do this in character?
Hang on a second. It is a period of civil war in the galaxy. A brave alliance of underground freedom fighters has challenged the tyranny and oppression of the awesome galactic empire.
I'm already on board. Already now, that film is better.
I agree. I genuinely think that it works in the form of the cartoon because it did have that weekly. Adventure vibe about it.
Is it like 6 years though between this and the series?
There's less than that, I think.
The film is 2008, isn't it?
The TV series came out around about the same year.
Oh wow!
Oh.
The theatrical feature film came out on August 15th, and then debuted in Cartoon Network 2 months later.
Oh. Okay.
Oh. Each episode is around a time of 22 minutes, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I feel there's certain things I want to say about this film that I don't want to say right now because I genuinely feel that if I say it right now, I will have absolutely nothing to say over the next hour. But it is in regards to the kind of conversation we've just been having here.
Excellent. Get it in. Say it now. We can call it a day. I'm done.
If you've ever seen me do comedy, you'll find that I never get to the point and I try and kind of keep it going as long as I can. I can do like a kind of 2-minute set over a period of about 25 minutes. John, that's my MO. And I just do the same with podcasts.
No one needs to have seen you do your comedy thing. All they've got to do is listen to one podcast and know that's your MO. Actually, I was going to possibly leave this to the end, but I'm going to ask it now while other bits unfold elsewhere around us and Jim Bowen weighs us. How does this compare, in terms of animation at least, because this is going to bring me to the thing I'm going to raise, to the TV show? How does the TV show and the film compare in terms of drama, fun, animation, that sort of thing?
Well, again, I was going to kind of comment on that too. The TV series, when it debuts, in terms of the animation, is a serious step back from this, believe it or not.
What?
Yeah. So the animation you see here is actually really good compared to around about the first two seasons.
What are they doing, Stickmen?
And then the TV series surpasses it.
Oh.
Right? It's one of these strange things where, by the way, I quite like the vibe of the early series. The early seasons and then they get into, but yeah, it's really weirdly enough that the animation being slightly cruder in the TV series somehow works better than the animation in the film.
Mm.
I'm not even sure how to explain that. It just feels.
I can actually understand where you're coming from because I've actually watched this twice now, and I say watched it. I lasted 4 minutes first time round, and I yelled "fuck off" and I turned it off. Because essentially it felt like I was watching a drawn out version of Star Wars Battlefront that I couldn't enjoy and take part in.
Yeah.
Because the voices were the same, the animation was the same. And it really struck me that if you go and watch the BBC animations of the Lost Doctor Who episodes, over time, obviously, if you watch them in chronological order, the animation is going to be very uneven. In terms of the release dates.
Yeah.
But if you watch them in chronological order in terms of the Doctor Who story, the animation's all over the place. But if you watch them in release order, you watch it evolve and get better and get better. But even the first one is quite crude, but it feels more fitting and more welcoming than this felt. This just felt really cold, clunky, and 16-bit graphics kind of thing.
Yeah.
Get me with a fucking technical reference, Laura. Ha!
Yeah, well done. you did well by referencing something from 12, 30 years ago.
Yay! I'm up to date. Nothing's changed, has it?
I'm not going to say 16-bit graphics. I'm going to say that the actual drawings are throughout accrued when we're looking at characters. The space scenes, I think, are just cartoony versions of what we see in external shots in space in the films.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a lot of difference.
No.
My main issue is when I'm looking at Samuel L. Jackson, who looks like his face has just been stretched beyond all possible recognition. It looks painful.
Samuel L. Jackson, if he got his head stuck in a lift door.
Yeah, it's okay. So what I'm going to do is there's this guy's called Samuel L. Jackson. He's quite famous. He's in a couple of the Star Wars films, but we need you to draw him. I know you've never seen him, but we'd like you to do it without seeing him. It's just part of the fun. It's part of the charm. Imagine you've never seen a human before. Okay, you use your imagination. You've never looked in the mirror.
So basically, they use droids. Which we'll come on to that. Anyway, sorry.
I mean, a lot of when you do put it like that, it's just a sheer stroke of luck that they managed to like realise it was black somehow.
Well, yeah, that, you know, that's like, an added bonus,
isn't it? You know, like, you met Samuel Jackson, you've never seen him before. They managed to get the fact that he hasn't got any hair and he's black, but not a lot else.
Well, I mean, the other thing I'm thinking now, and this has just come to me, you realise... Obviously, we are of an age and a generation that we'll get this reference. If you're a Star Wars fan who grew up with this stuff, you won't understand what I'm about to talk about. But your man, Senator Hoodamaflip there in the purple, who may or may not be the Emperor or Palpatine or someone, he looks like a spitting image puppet.
Or Guile from Street Fighter 2, but...
Yes.
Can I tell you just something a little bit funny about Padme? Just when you mentioned Padme, do you know that they actually did consider Natalie Portman to come back to voice Padme, and then they decided on somebody else?
Why do they do it? Why do they do it for so many characters in this? Though they kept Samuel Jackson, they keep Anthony Daniels, they keep.
Is Christopher Lee? Yes, it is Christopher Lee. And then subsequently, Christopher Lee and Samuel L. Jackson don't come back for the series. So they keep some of them. Obviously, you know, Anthony Daniels comes back for the series because, I mean, what else does he have going on?
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know when you see, like, Samuel L., you know, if it says Samuel L. Jackson and it says Star Wars... The Avengers, blah, blah, blah. They give you, look, this massive filmography, and then they go, Anthony Daniels, Star Wars.
Yep.
You know, I'm not saying he's not been in anything else, but I can't think of anything.
I'm looking him up.
Yeah, but it's exactly the same thing. Any film where you see something that looks vaguely like C-3PO, you just automatically assume Anthony Daniels is doing the voice.
Star Wars Detours, Lego Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars Holiday Special, Tooth 2020, Rise of Skywalker, Ralph Breaks the Internet, playing C-3PO, Star Wars Resistance, Solo, Episode 8, Force of Destiny, Rogue One. I Expect You to Die, video game 2016, that's one.
Wow, wow.
Disney Infinity 3.0, C-3PO. Keep going. Dirigible Days from 2012 to 2013, he narrated that. That's two.
Wow.
Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. Help, I'm No Bigger Than a Bug, in which he played the character Mal.
Chairman?
No idea. Conjure, don't know what that is. Wait, what? Anthony Daniels was in an episode of Doctors.
No.
Anthony Daniels was in an episode of Doctors.
I mean, Doctors is the new Casualty. Or rather, it's the new The Bill.
Yeah, but people did Doctors... and Casualty before they go on to fame, not in reverse.
No, but is this like the old comedy adage that you play everywhere twice, once on the way up, once on the way down?
Right, back down, yeah, absolutely.
So having missed out on The Bill on the way up, and I'm using the term up loosely, he meets doctors on the way back again.
I mean, I guess Star Wars comes to Holby, 17 actors who reunite the two universes.
We've delightfully gone off track and we haven't even discussed the plot of this thing yet. Does the plot actually make any sense?
I would just like to, once again, before I say it, because I just don't think I gave it enough press, Natalie Portman was considered for the role of Padme in this animation and then they found somebody else. So they rejected...
Was she not just doing something else at the same time, though?
No. They considered her for the role... And then decided on someone else.
I mean, what about the person who played Padme suggested to them that she wasn't right to play Padme?
Well, it's like when you hear all these kind of stories, like, if you hear stories about Robert Downey Jr. is on holiday and sees a Robert Downey Jr. lookalike contest and decides to enter and comes in third place.
Yep.
You know, that's the equivalent of them saying, should we choose...
Do you know what? Robert Downey Jr. playing Padme, I'd be in.
Yeah, I would be totally up for that too. Anyway, again, we've not got to any of the story yet.
We really haven't. In 2001, she played herself in Zoolander at the same time as recording Attack of the Clones, and then this came out shortly afterwards. And yeah, there's not a lot there. I don't think it's a clash of
diaries.
I mean, maybe they considered her, but she said, "Oh, would you know? I've got a thing. I'm a bit busy that week."
She's not that prolific, is she? When you look at it, because she, so she was in Thor, obviously, as Jane.
Yep.
The next film that she was in was Thor: The Dark World. It's like 2.5 years later.
Well, I guess if you've made,
she's not that prolific. Yeah, I didn't realize.
But,
to be honest, they probably considered all of the original cast. They probably could, you know, it's like, I mean, if they had said they considered Ewan McGregor for Obi-Wan but went with such and such, I mean, they've distinctly highlighted the fact that she was considered for the role and then they decided on someone else. I'm sure when they started off the Clone Wars, they probably thought, we'll get Samuel L. Jackson, we'll get Ewan McGregor in, and they probably went, and then all of those people went back and said, no.
Well, this is the other thing, isn't it? The fact that it's known, because you know it, so it must be known, that she was considered for the role and not offered it. Why would you make that public knowledge in any way, shape or form? Because effectively you're either saying to the world, we didn't think she was that good in the movies, or you're showing yourself up to be an idiot. Neither one you come out of it well.
I don't know, I'm assuming that it's the former.
I mean, you know, we are talking about the she has made some amazing films. She's got the odd bit of dross in there, but she has done some stunning work. And she clearly, as Laura said, she's not that prolific, so she picks and chooses.
Mm.
So they must have... I mean, we've talked about this in the first two podcasts, that her performance is actually quite wooden. But she's doing her best with what she's got, and she's trying not to steal every scene, because we know how good she is. So she's clearly dialing it down and just trying to get through it without out-acting the piece of cardboard who's playing opposite her.
Well, maybe she realised that there were better actors in this than Hayden Christensen, so she just said, actually, no, I don't want any part of this because I'll have to raise my game.
Yes, and I really can't be asked. It's that whole thing, you've got a little bit of milk left, but you could do with going to the shops. Can you be bothered?
Well, again, you know, I'm just looking at this again. Hayden Christensen was also considered to voice role Anakin before they decided on Matt Lanter, so it's the exact same story. They had the potential to get some of the original cast back, and then there was just a point where they just said,
nah.
Well, I mean, Hayden Christensen, I can understand.
But, you know, it might come down to the fact, you know, it could be that she was considered for the role and then they saw how much she wanted for it and they said thanks, but no thanks. We're assuming that this is based on
what's
talent.
The budget of this?
In my head, it's based on talent. You know, but they just kind of went, she does a better Natalie Portman than Natalie Portman
does. But that could also actually be a very intelligent move on Natalie Portman's part. You want me to play that part again? 10 million.
Yeah.
Oh, we can't afford that. Oh, well, them's the breaks.
Have you seen the animation? That's their whole budget.
Yeah. Which was $8.5 million.
Oh, in that case, that's almost certainly what she did. She deliberately
$8.5 million for. Hang on, let's go for a film. What, go, think of an animated film around 2008.
An animated film around 2008. The Clone Wars movie.
Yeah, that's a good one. There'd have been a Pixar film out around about then.
I'm trying to think.
Ants, A Bug Life. Is that
just
back then?
Just for a budget comparison.
Yeah, do you know what? Let's not use a Pixar film as a budget comparison. I don't even think we need...
Barbie and the Diamond Castle?
The animation in that is better than the animation in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Let's go down. Let's see. Madagascar 2. So, DreamWorks, but...
Yep.
It's was it straight to DVD?
Nope.
No, no,
Madagascar
2
is in the cinema.
Yeah, that went to the big screen, and it had a huge cast.
And it had a budget of $150 million. $8.5 million. Resident Evil Degeneration, which was the first full-length capture CGI Resident Evil film from 2008. Budget... $403,000. Okay, bad example.
seriously, they spent $400,000 on that.
Yeah, $400,000. Budget for Wall-E was $180 million.
Oh, waste of money.
What?
Oh,
Kung
Morgan.
Fu Panda was. Kung Fu Panda was $130 million. Okay, so take Resident Evil out of it. But there's a massive disparity there between... Hang on. Space Chimps was out that year.
Oh, dear God.
Space Chimps, 2008 computer animated common science fiction film directed by Kirk DeMico and written by DeMico and Rob Morland, featuring the voice of Andy Samberg, Cheryl Hines, Jeff Daniels, Patrick Warburton,
etc.
Budget, $37 million for Space Chimps. As opposed to this film, which is effectively still Space Chimps.
Well, that does raise... a separate question then, doesn't it? Given the amount of money thrown at the Star Wars franchise over the years, we all know that Star Wars itself was made for $3.72 and a bag of donuts. But after that, and the donuts were cold, after that, it did kind of get a bit more money thrown at it because it was clearly successful. And we know the first two had tons of cash thrown at it. So if you're going to that level to bring the franchise back, why do you then, and I'm aware this is George Lucas I'm talking about, piss on your own legacy by only giving the animated film peanuts? We're on Space Chimps again.
Hang on a second. I've got a good example here.
Yeah.
I can see John's thinking. This is worrying me.
I'm wondering because, I mean, obviously, you know, the Clone Wars came out after the prequel trilogy, even though it's set between episode 2 and 3.
Oh, it did, didn't it? Yeah.
And I think, you know, joking, the prequels, I don't know if anybody listening to this knows this, but the prequel trilogy was not held in very high regard.
No.
And it's possible nobody was willing to put any more money down.
Yeah,
but I mean
that would make sense.
Okay. So, even accounting for inflation, so we're going to account for inflation in this as well.
Okay.
If you account for inflation, Star Wars Episode 4, 1977, had a budget nearly 6 times higher than the Clone Wars.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it cost $11 million in 1977, which is worth about $48 million now.
Okay. Morgan just asked how much Home Alone made. I mean, really?
That's a fair question. I don't know, but it would seem to be important in the grand scheme of things.
It doesn't seem to be. It doesn't seem to be relevant.
Hey,
I know, but we're specifically talking about the Star Wars franchise.
Morgan has got to the heart of the nub of the periphery of the gist of the matter.
I think the biggest part of that is the fact that somehow she expected that Laura would just know.
To be fair, I did.
It took her a little while to kind of gather the information related to stuff that was relevant to this. And then Morgan just went, How much did Home Alone make? Not even how much was the budget of Home Alone.
Actually, do you know what? Home Alone, hang on, before I do this, Home Alone made something along the lines of 180 million or something. On its first, it was not high. It was not high. I'm going to say 180 million.
That's still not bad.
I was well off, so let's ignore that.
Okay. I mean, can we be sure that Macaulay Culkin wasn't considered for a part in the Clone Wars, but turned down, given their track record?
Macaulay Culkin does some of the voices in the new Bad Girls animation that's coming to BritBox.
That's a whole separate conversation. There are so many things wrong.
It's literally a whole separate conversation.
There's so many things wrong with that solitary sentence.
That's so niche that only three of the four people on this podcast even know what I'm doing. I mean, that's taken an in-joke to a new level, isn't it? It's just kind of going, yeah. You know, you've got in-jokes where people kind of go, oh, that was quite clever, and then you get in-jokes where going, there is no way that anybody else in the planet can know what you're talking about right now. Can others?
I mean, even Morgan's looking thoroughly confused.
Yeah, she doesn't have a clue.
Nope, I don't.
She doesn't. 460
million, Morgan. 460 million.
Wow.
I think the Queen has that much money. And she's rich.
I think the Queen's probably dead.
She does. Well, she won't have once she's finished paying those legal bills.
Although, there's a chance that that's actually gone up over, I bet that gets repeated a lot over Christmases in cinemas, in the States at least.
Well, it'll get repeated on every single cable TV network channel.
No, I know, that doesn't count towards a box office.
Are you sure? Because they have to pay...
TV does not count towards a box office.
But in terms of the gross that a film makes?
Similarly, box office does not account for, Black Widow being on Disney Plus on a streaming service, on a premium
I'm not counting streaming services, but I would have thought that...
But you're happy to count TV.
No, but I'm going back. I'm going back away because Home Alone is old now. And
Home Alone's like 30 years old. It's not that old.
Yeah. But 30 years is old.
My favourite Christmas
song. Speaking of someone who hasn't seen 30 for some time, 30 is old.
I made my family disappear.
Right, it's not a Home Alone podcast.
Moving on.
Yeah. I don't think we can possibly do this in the way that we've been doing these because, A, I don't think the plot stands up to us actually doing a synopsis without going into just basic details, because if we go in basic details of what happens, it's fine.
Yeah.
If we start deep diving down into each individual scene, as you have done on the previous two, we're going to become unstuck very, very quickly because, you know, bang, 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 lots of shooty stuff, bang, bang, bang,
yeah.
Shitty droids from the first film, bang, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the scenes themselves don't really add up that well, it has to be said.
This is true. But we can do. What we can do is we can give the plot and what we made of the plot, what little plot there actually is, stretched out over a 90-minute film.
Yep. Well, okay, who fancies having a running jump at exactly what the fuck is going on in this film?
John?
All right, okay. Basically, the... Right. To all intents and purposes, right, it is, for some strange reason, they decided to do a cinematic pilot to what was going to become a subsequent TV series. When you get down to the kind of brass tacks of it.
That's not the plot of the film, though, is it?
No, it's not the plot of the film, but it explains the plot of the film. Because if you actually think of this, I mean, that's the thing. Some people went to the cinema to see this, not realising that, to all intents and purposes, they were watching a backdoor pilot to something, which is a completely different beast. Right, so the lack of plot of this film, because right, okay, irrespective of what you think of the original trilogy, the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy, right, irrespective of what you think of those, they had a kind of cohesive, kind of central idea of what they wanted to do.
So what you're basically saying is, this was a 22-minute episode of The Big Bang Theory stretched over 90 minutes.
this was this could have potentially been done as a two-parter in the subsequent TV series. Right? What this is basically, for some strange reason, Anakin Skywalker getting a new Padawan.
Yeah, where did that come from?
And then trying to basically rescue a kidnapped baby Jabba the Hutt.
Again, where did that come from?
Yeah, right. So, if they had made the prequel trilogy, right, and they went and they did The Phantom Menace, and then for no reason they had Hayden Christensen rescuing a wee fat baby.
Yeah, this is where I was really starting to struggle with it, because I struggle with certain forms of animation anyway. If it doesn't look like you've taken care with your animation, if it doesn't look like you've drawn it with passion and with the characters in mind, I struggle to engage with it. That's on me. That's not necessarily a criticism of the artists. That's just how I react to what the visual stimuli. So I struggled with this to begin with. And then you suddenly see, oh, Yoda said he can have a Padawan. Yoda, what, who? Yep. What? Where? Why? For no reason. It's not even like they set that up.
The whole thing is, it's just like, what's her name?
Ashoka.
Ashoka Tano.
Young
Ahsoka Tano.
Snips.
Snips.
Yes, Snips. We're led to believe to start off with is Obi-Wan's new Padawan. Before she's like, oh, actually,
yes,
ooh, this is yours, Anakin.
But I mean, bear in mind, Yoda didn't even want Obi-Wan to have Anakin as a Padawan.
Mm-hmm.
Why then did he suddenly go, well, what the hell, you might as well have one as well, Padawan for everyone. He suddenly turns into the Padawan Oprah.
The weird thing is, if you watch the entire Clone Wars, Ahsoka comes off as the best character.
Mm.
Well, weirdly, am I right in thinking she does pop up in later films?
She's in The Mandalorian.
That's it. I knew I'd seen her in
something. She's in The Mandalorian, and also she technically does a voiceover in the last Star Wars film, the name of which has completely escaped me.
Yes.
Rise of the Skywalker.
Yes, she does.
Yeah.
But what struck me in her little scenes is, I know she's bright orange against quite a dark background, but even that aside, she stands out. She steals every scene she's in, which is no mean feat.
It's very difficult not to in this, right? Again, I stand by the fact that if you watch the Clone Wars, and it's actually worth a watch, the TV series, it's worth a watch. It's very good, but it's very good because he managed to do snapshots of a war.
Oh,
and
he
managed to do it in a very good way. And this, weirdly enough, was too long, right? Also, the biggest thing about this is you see a film in the cinema called The Clone Wars, and you expect it to be about, wait for it, The Clone Wars, which this
to be fair, Attack of the Clones has some clones in it, all with that very, very strong South African, New Zealand-y kind of twang.
Yeah,
I know it's New Zealand, but it's very South African simultaneously. It's very, very weird.
Clones come from the Southern Hemisphere. That's a fact.
This is true. The first half of this film has a lot of that. Has a lot of that voice work,
yeah.
Because obviously, it's the same voice over and over again.
Yeah, but
it's all Jango Fett.
It's basically the voices from Star Wars Battlefront, isn't it?
Mm.
It's a very small pool. It's kind of like the voiceover pool they've got on Netflix. There's seven people in it.
I will say, going back to the kind of voice of the Clone Warriors, is the fact that, again, the TV series does it so much better, and that you actually start to get... Because the Clone Wars TV series is, to all intents and purposes, more about the Clone Wars. This, again, I'll reiterate the fact, this is clearly a big screen backdoor pilot to a TV series. And they actually, you know, it's the same voice actor that they use for the TV series. and he actually manages, even though he's got this, you know, the Clone Warriors all with the same voice, blah, 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 he actually manages to bring a good interpretation of specific characterization to it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in terms of the kind of voice acting and the TV series, he must have quite a significant role in it, and the fact that he plays hundreds of parts, really.
Yeah.
And he does manage to bring it. Obviously, you know, the Clone Warriors are always either predominantly foreground characters or background characters, depending on how the story's going to be. Because the thing about the Clone Wars is that it does kind of grab certain elements of what's happening, and they'll have four episodes in a row that are about what's happening to Obi-Wan, and then they'll jump to kind of Anakin, and then they do, and they've got these kind of story arcs running through, and they also don't do it in chronological order, which I've spoken to you a little bit about before. This film, for instance, isn't the start of the Clone Wars series. If you watch it chronologically, it's set between a season two episode and a season one episode. It's ridiculous way that they kind of weave it around. And whoever took the time out to actually work out the chronology behind it has done a fantastic job, and it works.
Wikipedia, I think, says it takes place between season one episode The Hidden Enemy and the season three episode Clone Cadets.
Yes,
so
yes,
it's like
it does.
A whole two seasons.
Yep. But I think I said you guys the list before about what it does, and I think the first episode, as I recall, is like the first episode of the Clone Wars is like the 16th episode of season one, and then the next episode is the 16th episode of season two, and then it jumps between one, three, and two, and blah. It gets a little bit more coherent as it goes on in terms of the chronology, but it actually works. That's not to say you can't watch it in order that it's recorded because of the kind of nature of it, but like for instance, you know, the show character appears and disappears based on the fact that she might not even have come into the story before then, and there's certain times when they're heading towards a planet, and then obviously other shit happens for about one and a half seasons, and then suddenly they're on this planet again, and you do go, oh wait a minute, that's following on from something that happened 3 years before, and they do these kind of it's very rare that there's an episode of the Clone Wars that's a kind of standalone story. It usually leads into something else or is leading from something else, but it doesn't necessarily have to have been the last episode that had been on the. Do you know what, if they were ever going to do a kind of Doctor Who Gallifrey Time War series, this would be the best way to actually do it, because it could really mess with the chronology. And it does work really well, and it does do these kind of snippets in time, surprisingly well. And to be honest, a lot of it's probably down to whether the voice actors were available or not.
Well, I'm going to ask this question now, because you brought it up. And when you were talking about how the chronology of the episodes and the actual proper timeline don't flow and they jump around, we've talked about this. There is a viewing order you can get for Buffy and Angel.
Yeah.
Which jumps between the two, but it still flows.
Yeah.
So you don't go back an episode to go ahead an episode. It all just flows through. And you can do the same with Star Trek, with Next Gen, DS9 and Voyager.
Yeah.
And you can jump around between them after a while, but they still all flow in the same chronological order. So you're saying about if you could do that, what they've done with this with the Gallifreyan Time War, can you imagine what the Doctor Who fans would do to you if you didn't do it chronologically?
Well, that's the really annoying thing about Doctor Who fans.
But how did Star Wars fans
complain about the fact that something doesn't make logical linear sense in a show that's fundamentally about time travel and the potential associated paradoxes?
Well, I know. I appreciate we are talking about a set of people who see a new character in a thing, go, I don't know who that is. What's going on? Chibnall must go. It's like, it's a new character. Give it time. Shut the fuck up. But how did Star Wars fans then deal with this, basically write a script, chuck it in the blender, and we'll see what episode comes up first?
Because it works.
Okay.
I don't genuinely think the intention was to mess with people's heads. They just thought, I can tell a good story, blah, blah, blah. And they're going, just because this is a three-episode story arc about Tatooine doesn't mean we can't then jump to close to the end. You know, I don't think it was ever intended. It was supposed to be kind of snapshots from a war, right? And I don't think it was ever intended. You know, they just did this idea for making story arcs and blah, blah, blah. And then they jump to something else. I mean, it gets quite ridiculous in places where there's characters that are training as cadets. And then you see them out there in the war, fighting, fighting, fighting. And then about three seasons later, there's another story arc about them being cadets again. You know, so that. But again, it's like, so I don't think, I think someone just went, I've got a really good idea about something. They were aware of the fact that the timeline wasn't kind of coherent and in place and just went, let's go for it and let's just tell a good story. And then retrospectively, somebody went back and said, look, this actually fits into a specific chronology of what we know, and then they kind of sorted out that way. But, I mean, you don't lose anything from watching this.
No.
Okay. You don't lose anything from watching this in broadcast order at all.
Okay.
And the beauty of the fact that you know where it's going, because at this point you already knew how this was going to end. I mean, they've actually, to an extent, you know, there's nothing you can actually really do, and the fact that you know the fate of most of the characters in this, there's nothing you can actually do to kind of mess with it.
That raises another question, because, like, again, crossing the streams, the Black Widow film, which Laura mentioned earlier, there is an inherent lack of peril in that film because you know where it's set.
Yeah.
And I know some people who watch that and gone, they can't get on board with it because you know what's down the line. So you kind of know there's no, and it's the problem. Weirdly, I don't have that problem with Black Widow, but I do have that problem with Superman. But does that create a problem within the Clone Wars whole shebang?
I was thinking exactly this as I was watching this, thinking nobody who I don't want to say care about. I've seen the third film. I've seen the actual good films. Asaka, maybe there's a chance because I don't know the Clone Wars. I don't know what's going to happen there. But there's not an introduction of any other character. You think, oh God, they could die by the end of this.
Yeah.
I mean, there are introductions of new characters. But the less said about those, the better. But we'll come to those in a bit. There is no peril whatsoever.
There isn't any peril.
Throughout the film.
Yeah.
There isn't any peril, but there's actually, and again, you could say the same in the subsequent TV series, and I think more so in the TV series. And by the way, you've also got to remember that this is predominantly made for kids, right? This TV series was predominantly, this is predominantly a kids or family TV show, and I don't think, like, when Scott's not watching this, and he sees Anakin jumping about and then suddenly says, oh, I know that this guy's fated to become Darth Vader and blah, you know, I think we have to look at it that way as well. There is no peril, but as an adult watching this, there is a real kind of, not necessarily this film, but watching the series, there's a real tragic element to it.
Well, in as much as it exists.
It builds in the kind of camaraderie between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and also the relationship between Anakin and Ahsoka. And you just see, you can actually just watch this unfold going, why did this go wrong?
It's
a tragedy. It's like watching Hamlet, knowing how Hamlet ends, kind of going, there are so many times you're looking at it and just kind of going, look, you could fix this right now, but you're not.
Well, that actually raises an interesting subsequent point then, because does that, in a way, make Revenge of the Sith a better film? Because you actually retrospectively give those characters more backstory and more emotion. Could it improve?
I get more out of Revenge of the Sith after my Clone Wars watch through.
That's what I was just wondering.
Even though I knew where it was kind of going, it's like, you know, when you watch a film and you know something bad's going to happen there because it's quite clear, and they've signposted it.
Mm.
Sometimes they actually very specifically signpost going, that was the day I died.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of going, all right, here we go. And you're just kind of going, oh, shit. And then there's times when you just see stuff and you know it's coming and there's no way it can't happen. And again, you know, that's just because he showed you it about 5 years before in another film. It kind of add that kind of tragic element to it. The most tragic thing about this is the fact that nobody got the voice actor of Obi-Wan Kenobi to actually listen to Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
So you're saying Big Finish did the casting for this then?
Jacob Dudman plays Obi. But,
okay!
For some bizarre reason, they do play Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi like he's a character from a Carry On film. Because every time he kind of goes, "Oh, yes, Anakin," you're just thinking, "That's a very big lightsaber you have."
I wish you wouldn't wave that around in public. The last time you did this, you ended up in prison.
In terms of the TV series, I just wish it would get better.
Anakin, the lightsaber used to be green. Why is it red now? Is it the blood flowing?
I got that checked out, Anakin. It sounds like smutty Santa Claus.
Carry On Clone Wars is the best film ever.
What would you like for Christmas today, Eric? It just sounds like sitting Obi-Wan's knee. it does sound, and I don't understand, but Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan didn't do anything near a good enough impression of what he wanted, you know, of the character that he becomes in the original trilogy,
I wonder, Guinness. In the same way that we said that the animators clearly didn't actually look at a picture of Samuel L. Jackson before drawing him, and all that really happened was someone went, no, he's meant to be black. Oh, okay, I'll colour that bit in.
Yeah.
maybe the cast of this weren't allowed to actually watch the first three films to get an idea of what the voices would sound like. And they went, "You're going to be playing a Scottish man who's pretending he's English." Okay.
I just want to bring this up
while I think about it, actually. When discussing the first two Star Wars films, as we have, we did kind of raise the point that the animated version of Yoda was, and I think the technical term we used was shit.
Yes.
Is it actually better in this film?
No.
Okay, good. I wasn't just meaning.
No, because I don't want to look at Yoda's teeth.
I'll
it's like Sonic the Hedgehog's teeth, and they had to change them.
Sonic the Hedgehog has teeth?
Sonic the Hedgehog had human teeth, and everyone kicked off, so they went and made them proper hedgehog teeth.
Oh, was that for the Blue Fuzzy film? Drunk. That was the Blue Fuzzy film, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I forgot.
But again, the same problems that you have with Yoda, and I'll go back to Obi-Wan for a second, and I won't talk about how he just sounded like... Carry on up the empire. we nearly got a picture there. In terms of like how bad the animation is when you look at things like Obi-Wan's beard and Yoda's, you know, Obi-Wan looks like in real life it would be like a low budget film, and you got a character in, you got an actor in who couldn't grow a beard but needed a beard. And you painted strips of paper and sellotaped it to the.
It looks like wood.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
It does.
It looks like he's got some kind of Dutch elm disease. No, that's not what Dutch elm disease is. Both his hair and his beard actually just look like they're pine.
Yep.
They've had a nice polish. Yep.
They are. I mean, maybe.
Anakin,
I mean,
I've got wood.
But again, I mean, it does look like he's been.
Go back to the hair in general.
He's been well creosoted. You
see his action scenes and their hair doesn't move?
No, this is it. And this is one of the problems I had with this. And I know the budgets are different. I appreciate that. But Paddington Bear was animated. In amongst all the humans, Paddington Bear was entirely animated.
Yep.
And that opening scene, where the camera pans across and you have his nose and his eyes and you see his fur and he just looks so realistic. I'm not saying they had to go to that level, but there is at least two steps up from this where beards move in the breeze. And they didn't go with that. They went with the Lego option.
They went with Lego, solid hair.
Yep.
It's just there. It's Jedi lacquer. is what it is.
It is, isn't it? I mean, do you remember the early graphics programs where you just kind of click on a thing, a colour, and click on a space, and it would just auto-fill it, and there was no finesse? Yes. It feels like this is how this was designed.
Yes, it absolutely does.
An early version of MS Paint.
At least they put shadows in.
No, that's true. That's true. On the subject of this being a kiddies film, is one of the kiddies who normally inhabits this podcast around, or has she got bored and wandered off?
She was here, and then my son just came in demanding chocolate, and I muted the microphone and said, "Could you go and deal with that shite?"
So I actually try and bring her in. I try and bring in the prodigy of this podcast for a discussion, and you send her off to do your parenting.
Wait, would you rather she had come in and asked what the budget of fucking Home Alone 3 was while I was off?
Fair point.
I just let Scott just come in and go, "Can I have something from my box?" Because we've got a
can we not?
Do you know what? I'm willing to talk about this for 15 minutes, and I kind of find that it means we're not talking about the Clone Wars film, so here we go. Right? But I basically, Tanya's in choir tonight. They were doing it online, and then she managed to go back to where they were doing choir. But because we've currently got a climate change summit going on, nobody's able to kind of get to where they do choir. So she's doing it again online. And we're doing this, and then Scott was the kind of missing link here. So I put him down in front of Lego Batman, which is admittedly an infinitely better film. We should have probably just gone in the living room and talked about that. And there's clearly a point where he was just sitting there for no reason whatsoever saying, "I ate my dinner. Where's my dessert?"
You can't fault the boy's
logic.
We'll
go back, and this is the thing that frustrates me, because we will get back to the Clone Wars shortly. No, we won't. But my children seem to think that for some reason they deserve dessert every night. And I didn't have that as a child.
Well, see, I blame the parents for raising expectations.
I don't know where the fuck they got it from, because they sure as hell didn't get it from us. But for some bizarre reason, they think that you finish your dinner and you get dessert. Whereas when I was growing up, it was just kind of going, "You're getting dessert because we've got visitors coming, so I bought a gatto."
Yes. Yeah, grandma's coming. I splashed out on a Viennetta.
Deputy. Wait, no, that's a different song. Sorry.
We can't have your pudding till you finish your...
Fancy tonight. Do you like Viennetta?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we've got the posh visitors around.
Oh, fancy. And now I look derisively at Viennetta, whereas back in the day it used to be. Kind of,
oh man!
That to me.
In the mid 80s, Viennetta meant you were having a good day.
Yeah, absolutely. not when it was sold for a pound in Heron.
Sell by dates don't matter. Actually, now
just Morgan has returned, and as well as getting dessert for Scott, she got herself some confectionery too.
That sounds very reasonable. I like Morgan's logic.
I've just been sent my very own Attack of the Clones.
You've been sent your very own Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, me in Lego form in an Attack of the Clones.
That is fantastic. Awesome. That is brilliant.
Someone's just made that for me. Just sent it me.
Whoa! Someone else out in the real world made that for you and sent it to you. Yeah. Ah, that's slightly creepy, slightly scary.
I do know them.
Oh, that's all right. That's fine. As you're back, Morgan, before we get on to the point that Lego Batman is a shit film, but it's still better than this. Morgan, have you watched the film we're talking about? Have you watched Attack of the Clone, The Clone Wars?
Did I watch it?
Yes.
Have you watched it?
I think so.
Yeah, we watched that a week and a half ago when we were supposed to be doing this fucking podcast. I can understand why you may have forgotten something. Like,
yeah, that's like, fair enough.
I've played about 8 failed attempts.
In that case,
the one where they're trying to save the kidnapped baby Jabba.
Oh, yeah.
So as the target audience for that, Morgan, did you enjoy it?
Quite funny, yeah.
Well, you can't argue with that, can you? Quite funny, yeah. I mean, it's not 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it's not a bad review, and it's better than the kicking we're giving it. So now that people finished making Lego versions of Laura, should we move on to the characters that get brought into this thing?
Yeah.
Laura's nodded off at this point.
I have not nodded. I have nodded off.
Nodded. So, amongst the, because there are some characters in this that appear that do actually reappear, aren't there? There are recurring characters introduced. Like, well, I say there are. There's one. The others are established characters. Is there anyone else in this apart from the orange one who does come back later on?
Okay, in terms of what characters they brought in for the purpose of this film,
for dramatic purposes, let's flatter them and say there was a plan.
Hang on a second. Shall we go to? Because there's a few things. So we've got Asajj Ventress, who is.
Who?
I don't want to say useless.
Yeah, go on, say useless.
I don't want to say useless, considering, yes, we've got ourselves some female representation in the Clone Wars, and then she spends most of the time being belittled and beaten by Obi-Wan.
Yeah. But at least, you know, you can't say that girls aren't in the film.
It's an all right fight. It goes on for way too long. And it does seem, as I was watching it, I was very much, this is way too long. This is way, this is just here because they need 10 minutes to fill the lightsaber fight. And I know it's not all this, it does dip between the two.
So we're back on double lightsabers?
Of course we're back on double lightsabers.
Because it's a good kind of set piece, isn't it? You go, ooh.
It's less impressive when it's animated, though. When it was being done for real, it was quite impressive.
It's just different coloured sticks, which I know they're coloured sticks in the film, but at least it looks like a lightsaber. Whereas that just looks like Lego sticks with a bit of glow on them.
Does Ventress come back for the series, John?
Yes.
Okay. Did wonder because it's very final. Yes, we'll decide what to do with you later. You failed, blah, 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 blah.
I should have probably gone into a wee bit more detail than just said yes.
No, yes is fine. That's all we need to know.
Yeah, no, yes is absolutely fine. Can we also talk about Baby Jabba?
We do need to. We really do need to.
We do need to talk about Baby Jabba. We'll come to my biggest issue with this entire film after Baby Jabba. But Baby Jabba. Do 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 do. Baby Jabba. Do 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 do.
Baby Jabba.
Stinky.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Suddenly they go, we've got Jabba the Hutt's son. We're looking after the Jabba the Hutt's son. This is Jabba. It's Stinky. Oh, yeah, we've got Stinky here. What?
Stinky the Hutt.
We are very much making it for kids now by calling it. We know Jabba. They don't mention during this the whole, okay, so back on Tatooine when Jabba was in charge of the pod racing.
No, not mentioning any at all.
Jabba, obviously, any and Anakin had background back then. They would have known each other because they were both on the same fucking planet in the same area.
Yep. Nope. Gloss over
but
that.
But they do not mention. They do not mention at all any kind of relationship of past. It's just, oh, Jabba, fine.
Yeah. It's like, we all know who that is. That's it. We're moving on. And no one actually thinks.
So we're not going to explore it.
No. But. Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing this might be where you have the slight issue as well going forward. Is where does Baby Jabba go?
Is Baby Jabba in the series, John?
I don't believe so. I can't remember Baby Jabba being in the series.
Baby Jabba does go through the whole of this, just sitting either in a backpack or on a lap, being very Baby Jabbery.
Yeah.
And ill. So for all we know, maybe Jabba's belligerence later on. In the franchise is because of...
He's grieving.
Yeah, maybe.
Suddenly we're giving Jabba the Hutt character.
And who knew it would come from this?
I mean, this is the other thing. I mean, it's not the fault of the writers of this film because time moves forward and things happen. But Baby Jabba, when now we have The Mandalorian, just looks like a really shit pilot done by students for The Mandalorian.
It does. It does. It looks like Ahsoka's carrying around a turd in a bag.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, someone suddenly went, oh, do you know what? If you made that Yoda, it'd be brilliant. And it's just...
Do you reckon that's how it went? That like somebody was going back through, just like, what can we do for The Mandalorian? Do we have to watch The Clone Wars? Yes, we've got to watch it. It was very much like our conversation here.
Yeah, it really was.
Do we have to watch The Clone Wars? Yes, we have to watch The Clone Wars. Will some good ideas come from this? Well, we'll wait on our side. who knows? But with them, it's very much a case of, oh, God, imagine if we were going to make that into a character beloved, but a very small version. R2-D2, no, that's a droid. It's a droid. You can't have a baby droid.
Oh, I don't know.
I want R2-D2.
I mean, it does feel like someone had an idea. We need a beloved baby version of a thing because Muppet Babies were really popular in the 90s. And then
Muppet Babies is finished by the 90s.
Was it the 80s?
Muppet Babies was very 80s.
Oh, shows what I know.
I mean, it was repeated on the BBC for years, but you would have been in your late teens by then, so you shouldn't have been watching it.
I didn't get that much. Creep. So that somehow implies I might have had a social life in my teenage years, and we all know.
Or
I didn't.
You just sat there watching Muppet Babies. Which would you prefer?
Just because you like Nanny's legs.
Oh man,
Nanny's legs and her purple shoes.
I mean, that was a delightful homage and a safe homage to the classic Tom and Jerry era.
Yes.
So anyway, yeah. Right. So back to
so people don't know that when we do these, particularly now, we don't watch along, but we do have it just like I'm skimming through, and everyone else can see what we're doing. Has anyone seen anything of any interest while it's just been
no?
They're going through.
Oh, actually, like there, any kind there, of plot that point, bit,
which,
that
which
bit,
may do
very briefly. There was, for reasons I'm sure John will happily explain to me, a cameo of the medicine droid from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, there's loads of things, and the Clone Wars silly little kind of bizarre Easter eggs for no reason.
It just doesn't make any sense.
There was an episode I was watching recently, and they had the band from the A New Hope. Just kind of in the background.
I mean,
they were playing a different tune. They've got more than one tune. Just imagine if that was their... So they do stuff like that occasionally. They have just kind of this stuff that makes no chronological sense. But you're kind of going, well, I mean, it might not be them. It might have been their parents who were also in a band.
Ah, could be, couldn't it? You know. I mean, that to me has never been...
I've just been reminded of this. And the Star Wars comic series that I'm reading right now, there was the same band from A New Hope playing, and there was a massive bar fight, and then one of them turns around to the other and says, I mean, who books these gigs? This happens every time.
I mean, my favourite thing... for the house band is in one of the Family Guy Star Wars specials, and they go to do right, we're going back and play the same song again. Well, same song again. Okay. I also like the fact that Laura has not even hidden the fact that she needs alcohol to get through talking about this fucking film.
Not at all. Oh, yeah, because I'm the only one, sure. And
I've run out.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think John should go and get some before I go on a rant, because I'm going to go on a rant very soon.
This is herbal tea. Go on. It just looks like a glass of wine.
Is that not alcohol?
It looks like red wine, but it's honestly, it just happens to be herbal tea in a wine glass.
It's
my talking juice, and I've run out, so I'm going to have to hit the rum.
No,
I tell you, the holiday in Whitby was brilliant, if only because I discovered rum.
Guys.
Oh, lovely little cat.
Oh,
Oh, she's adorable. Yeah, I'd watch out. She's about to smack you one.
I know, she never does.
Yeah, give it time.
She loves playing with my hoodie. She's cleaning herself right now.
But she likes playing with the threads on your hoodie.
Look, she's...
That sound you can hear, listeners, is Morgan now showing us her playing with the hoodie thread with the cat, which doesn't make for great radio, but I thoroughly enjoyed watching it.
Completely.
In the meantime...
This is just making me want to put Jim Bowen in the end scene.
In the meantime, Laura is busy putting Jim Bowen in various scenes from Attack of the Clones and improving them immensely.
Now he just looks like he's doing. Now he just looks like he's given the sign language.
Jim Bowen does the subtitles.
That frog thing's quite funny.
They could just get the last scene in the Attack of the Clones when Padme and Anakin are getting married, and then Jim Bowen just comes up and goes, "There's nothing in this game for two in a bed."
Before Laura
thus,
goes
thus
on,
underlining the tragedy that was to come.
Before Laura goes on her rant, and I am seriously looking forward to this, I would just like to politely request that John does not use the phrase "backdoor pilot" again through the course of this podcast, because I'm still the more you say it, the more I become convinced that that was a late 80s, early 90s porn film.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
And there's Jabba. Jabba, I believe, was the name of one of the characters.
One more time before Laura goes into her rant, and I mentioned the kind of backdoor pilot. For one final time, is the fact that what I meant to say was, this is absolutely fine if you do look at it as a pilot, but people paid for cinema tickets to come and see this, and were probably wondering what the fuck. We're now.
Oh, it's our first new Star Wars film in 3 years. Woo!
Oh, yeah. What is this? Why call it the Clone Wars? Why not call it Jabba's Boy Gets Kidnapped?
Jabba's Boy Gets Kidnapped.
I mean, we had Rogue One. We had Solo.
Jabba's bumped away, absolutely. As Gary Glaswegian already said, Star Wars. Somebody's bumped Star Wars Episode 3.5. Somebody's bumped the way.
That's a better
title. It's a very Glaswegian phrase. I'm not sure if it translates.
That's a better title.
Else, but that, Morgan nailed it.
That is a better title than anything.
Clone Wars movie in one Glaswegian sentence. Yep.
That's a better title than anything George Lucas ever came up with. Anyway, rant time. Settle back, children. Off we go.
So I think it's fair to say that I did not enjoy this film. But I think John did we've understated the plot a little bit. Not just John, all of us.
There isn't a plot.
In the plot is that, yes, baby Jabba is sick. Jabba, very upset. But there is the coercion bridging in Count Dooku into the entire thing.
Oh, God, yeah.
And Christopher Lee is just Christopher Lee. You can tell he's bored during some of the lines, but he's at least trying.
Yeah.
He's at least trying. He's putting some kind of gravitas into it and out-acting everyone again, because it's what Christopher Lee does. It's fine. It's overacting in this, but it's fine. But of course, there is another.
Go on.
And the fact that you've that hasn't even been mentioned, this character hasn't even been mentioned so far. Zero.
I don't...
Okay,
yeah.
Zero the Hutt.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Jabba's uncle.
Uncle Zero.
Uncle Zero. That's how he talks.
I was hoping we were going to get away without mentioning this.
That is Zero. So you have Jabba. You've always known that Hutts speak Huttese. You have Jabba, who... which is fun. That's what we've always had. That's what we've always had from the Hutt.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden we discover that there is a Hutt who speaks perfect English, but has a voice like this. My nephew Jabba. Oh, yeah, well, it's part of some big kidnap plot, isn't it? Oh. And having not seen this before, today, because I did watch the second half of this today. It's the first time I've ever seen it. I wasn't paying 100% attention because I thought, this is so dull. I'm making notes. I'm just looking up. And then I heard the voice and I was flabbergasted.
Yeah.
By the piss-taking. Because there's a certain amount, there's a certain element of, yes, we've got a cartoon. It's for kids. I'm gonna read you the quote from StarWars.fandom.com. This is the one quote they've got from George Lucas about this film. It's not about the film. It just literally says, it's unusual for an animated film because it's not really like, say, Beowulf, and it's not a Pixar movie. So it kind of falls in between in this funny world where Star Wars is, which is kind of hard-edged, but not really. Sort of on the verge of PG-13. Flips over once in a while, but sort of the high end of PG. Oh, I'm Zero the Hutt. And I am the antagonist. Fuck Count Dooku. I've got Frank Sidebottom. I'm so sorry.
Frank Sidebottom as Zero would be so much better.
I'm so sorry.
Can we just pause for a second and reflect on the wise words of George Lucas at this point?
Yes.
Because apparently, in George Lucas land, there is Beowulf, there is Pixar, and that's it. Yes. Those are the only two options you get.
Those are the two ends of animated films.
Yes.
Is this George Lucas's equivalent of the scene in Donnie Darko when I'm talking about what lies between love and hate?
Yeah, this is it.
There are only
two states in the world.
Yeah, love and fear.
There are only two animations available. Yeah, just overly complicated or Pixar. I mean, fuck off, George.
Beowulf or Toy Story?
I mean, out of the two, you'd rather watch. Well, Beowulf has Toy Story would be fun.
Well, that's on.
I mean, this again.
I find the whole Zero thing an utter piss take to anyone who's gone to see this expecting a serious Star Wars film. Yes, it's a cartoon. Yes, up until that point, it was dumb and a bit dull. But in my opinion, no duller really than the previous two films. Just because, yeah, there's a bit of action. Like the dialogue is somehow even worse. But like it's pretty terrible. But it's not awful, awful, awful. And then that happens,
yeah.
And that was the point. I just thought, holy shit!
Can I just jump in at this point?
Yes.
Because as you've mentioned, this is kind of scrolling away in the background as we talk about this. Now, all three of us are fantasy fans and superhero fans and Marvel fans and whatnot, yeah?
Mm.
Genre collectively, I know superheroes and fantasy don't go together, but for the sake of this argument, a genre collectively known for its issues with the portrayal of the female form.
Mm-hmm.
Generally drawn by teenage boys who think boobs only get better if they get bigger, and the bigger they are, the more superhero you must be. If we go back to that scene where she was talking to Jabba the Zero, and initially she's on all fours and then she stands up, that's a female form, much along the lines of Samuel L. Jackson's character, drawn by someone who's never seen a woman. She stands up. It's just one of those things that really annoys me. Because clearly, women exist. Women have certain forms. That's fine. And no two women look the same. Absolutely fine. But suddenly you hit animation and you hit shit like this. And it's prepubescent kids who clearly have never been anywhere near a woman who just think, boobs round. Boom. Fuck it.
This is not the old, you know, let they who are without comics these days are still bloody doing it. I mean,
oh totally,
they've recently returned Spider-Woman to her original costume, which was removed from being her original costume, and the fact that people complained about the fact that
she has suddenly got a lot bigger, hasn't she? And the costume's got a lot tighter, which
I don't know if this, I suppose, like fashion, is the same, that these things are quite cyclical, and that there are things that were in fashion and then go out of fashion. And there was a point where I felt that misogyny went out of fashion in comics and is unfortunately taking a stark return.
Yeah,
I'm still reading the comics, but that's beside the point. But
no, I had
genuinely cringing. Yeah,
I had exactly the same thought, because Black Widow has kind of toned it down, but Spider-Woman's compensating over the other side. And it almost feels like there is a certain percentage of female body that must be boob across the whole spectrum.
Yeah.
So as you make Black Widow look more normal, somebody else has to go the other way to compensate. Yep. And it's just so annoying.
Yep.
And I feel like almost
The X-Men are the worst for it, because they actually have it within the same comic book.
Yeah.
Where they feel like they're overcompensating for characters that you look at kind of Jean Grey now, and they've gone back to kind of classic Jean Grey, where she's got that kind of 1960s vibe, where there was definitely a point where she wasn't going for that kind of, you know, and they've almost kind of brought her right back to the kind of, you know, and even in terms of her uniform, which even though was very feminine, was. But there were certain things that you just couldn't get away with in the 60s. There was a real kind of exploitation in the 80s, especially with the X-Men. And unfortunately, you've then got other characters that are just said, well, you're almost kind of going, look, we've made Jean Grey look kind of a wee bit more kind of pleasing to the people that maybe think this is out of order. So we'll just show a wee bit more boob here. And you're just kind of, and it is quite,
well, I was about to ask.
It takes me out of it.
Yeah, well, this is it. But I was about to ask, because
the tragedy being it probably didn't take teenage me out of it at all.
No, well, you change and grow as you go through life, all being well. But I am. It kind of, I feel it kind of sort of is counterproductive that two blokes are saying it shouldn't look like this, because as there are women on the podcast. I was about to say, there are women on the podcast, and she disappears from my screen. Timing, Laura. What's your personal view on this? Because I feel it's awkward and a bit cringy, but I'm aware of the fact that I'm coming at it from the outside. But so from inside the sphere, shall we say? Is that the right term to use?
inside the sphere, in terms of representation and the... I mean, okay, let's go through female characters that we saw during the course of this.
Oh God, must we?
Padme.
Yep.
Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I thought this was a good episode.
But again, Ahsoka's, considering, you know, that spends a lot of time kind of travelling through space and on alien planets, just isn't he dressed for it?
Well, no. No.
I'm not saying that they've both. I don't think.
Can we also point out?
Sexualized Ahsoka.
Well, I hope not, because I was going to point out, because she is a child.
Yeah. There is that small point, isn't there?
She's a child. In Star Wars lore, she gets killed and resurrected when she's 16, which is like further down the line from this. So she's a child.
Yeah.
And yeah, she suffers from the same thing.
Quite,
and it's very weird.
She's quite scantily dressed, but not. She's quite scantily dressed, though, which is worrying in its own regards when you put it like that. Mm-hmm. So they're not overly sexualized, which would be wrong, but they also don't put much on her in terms of her dress.
Well, no, this is kind of why I wanted more.
And it's also inconvenient for someone that travels through space, but again, them are opening things up, going, nobody's ever dressed for space travel.
You're just thinking of the practicalities there of being dressed correctly for space travel.
I mean, are you surely at the very least...
Nobody ever wears a suit.
No, exactly what I was going to say. Surely you need a tie.
Nobody wears a suit. They just wear their own casual gear that they wear every single day. No, you never see them wear anything else.
You need your best shoes. You need your dress shoes for space.
Who actually changes in the whole Star Wars saga? Luke obviously goes from white to black.
Yes.
In terms of clothing, yes. but who actually changes? Over several years, obviously, Leia changes.
Leia wears more as you go down the line.
Like practical, casual.
Yes.
Lando Calrissian changes as well. He decides after betraying Han Solo to start wearing his wardrobe.
Well, you realise actually, as we go down this cautious path, you realise that actually, until you hit the new Star Wars films, the female, we will get to you, Morgan. I see your hand up. You do realise that the female representation in the early Star Wars universe is Leia.
Leia, yeah.
And there's Leia.
It's Leia, and then
there's Leia.
Mon Mothma.
Don't forget there's Leia.
Yeah, but there's also Mon Mothma in Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
That's still it.
Yes.
That's still literally it. I don't know how you tell the gender of an Ewok.
Carefully. With gloves.
I don't want to use an old school term, but I've never tried to sex an Ewok. So.
God, I wish I could say the same.
I find if you offer fruit first, it goes more easily.
Come and knock him in a caravan of courage as well.
But yes, very much. Then we have Padme in the prequels and a couple of other characters.
Yes.
Some of those are clones.
Yep.
It's
only the new films where you actually get decent. I mean, arguably, they kind of address the balance in Rogue One. We'll get to that. But it's only in the later films where you actually start getting more female characters with depth, personality, and backstory. Yep. Morgan, your hand was up for a while.
Okay, so...
Oh, dear.
It's better not be about Home Alone.
Oh, you know it's going to be.
Talking about space again.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, you're right. They weren't in the right gear for space. For space, you should have at least some hiking boots on, hat, glove, scarf, a thick jacket.
That, no, you're confusing going into space with hiking, Morgan. You're confusing going into space with hiking.
Yeah. You know, like walking, but you need proper grippy
you
shoes.
You need walking, but you need proper grippy shoes. That is okay. Probably true.
If I was going to go into space,
is very much like walking in snow.
If I was going to go into space, I would make sure I went space shopping with Morgan. I feel I'd be dressed space for any eventuality.
Is a new podcast coming soon?
Yeah.
I think it's a Channel 5 series waiting to happen.
Morgan goes back to my original point, which says I think Ashoka is very underdressed for space.
I think I wear shorts and t-shirt if she's wearing dress.
Ashoka's parents should have seen her. I'm going to become a Jedi. You're going, you're not going out dressed like that.
Yeah, you're not Jediing like that on a Tuesday afternoon, my dear.
It is very, very short. And yeah, I mean, she's got gloves on, so she's not going to get cold.
And she does appear to have sensible boots.
This is true.
So arguably, she
clearly listened to Morgan.
Exactly, Morgan rule of
score when it comes to space travel.
Yep,
grippy shoes.
Morgan's rule of space travel are being applied: gloves and grippy shoes.
Okay. I think we've probably said enough about this by now, haven't we? But can we also just point out at the end of the film, after everything has come and gone, after we do the whole, oh look, everything is right again at the end, traditional Star Wars scene.
Yep.
Even this. Cannot get away from doing the whole let's just all look at the camera on the final scene before we hit the end credits.
I know.
For no reason whatsoever. But do you notice we have this big thing where, you know, like Jabba's there at the back. Jabba's there presenting. Look, here you go, passing him back over to Yoda. And then in the final scene, you can't have Jabba in the final scene, can you?
No, that would be wrong.
It has to be the good guys, because you know that Jabba's not a good guy. It's just...
It just doesn't make any sense.
It means that it's over, because I was just like, holy shit, there's still 7 minutes left. And then I thought, credits. There'll be credits, but it's an animation, so they'll be shorter. Shit. But then it did this, and it made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside that it was over. Knowing that they're doing the pose. They're doing the pose.
Well, this just is everybody it, isn't it? Staring. I mean, can you imagine the script writing meeting? It's animation. We can do anything. We can go anywhere. I want them all to do a line up and stare at the camera. Shut up, George. We can go anywhere. We can do anything you want. I want a parade and a medal. George, shush. Go and get biscuits. What we can do, we can have sky. We can go flying off. No, I'll give him a parade. He'll shut up then.
Just stick some guards at the side. It'll be different then.
Yeah, that'll look very different. Yeah, we'll just have like a 21 gun salute. We won't fire the bastard thing.
No, like even if they're walking at this point or about to start walking, nobody walks in line like that. This is a common problem I have with films.
Yes.
Nobody ever walks in synchronized walking.
No. Except but in Star Wars.
But they do in films.
They do in Star
unless
Wars films.
Unless you do it on purpose. Unless it's one of those art movies where they're trying to draw parallels and kind of going, look, this is drawing parallels.
I think in the art films you're used to watching, John, they're not walking.
We won't talk about those right now.
Right. I don't think we can kick this anymore. I'm not sure there's any more to be dug out of this.
I think the most important thing is we managed to make the podcast the same length as the film, so that's
without
that's
actually watching the film. That's fucking amazing.
I just need to interdict you and say every time Morgan tries to do the Star Wars tune, it turns into the kind of Lonely Mansion from the end of the Incredible Hulk series.
That's possibly more fitting to this final scene. As long as we're all wearing a hat, gloves, and sturdy boots.
Yeah. But she's been silly. No, you know, people like young kids might go, oh, I want to go to the moon. Let's wear a dress because she's wearing a dress.
Absolutely, you're right. Do you know what they've done here is really, you know, it's dangerous. It's unprofessional.
Might, you know, kids look up to people. They might go, oh, I'm going to the moon. I'm going to wear a dress.
Do you know what? Absolutely. When I edit this, and I might edit it.
You're right, Morgan. This is, you know, and I hope that if a child ever goes to the moon in a dress and dies, that somebody sues George Lucas.
Oh, they will. If I actually trouble myself with editing this bloody podcast, I'm going to take everything out apart from that last bit with Morgan talking about what you wear going to the moon. Because I think genuinely it's the only thing of value we have offered the world this week. Anyway, right. So we finally got shot. It took us fucking ages to even watch it. Never mind talk about it. So we've got shot of the...
It's all uphill from here.
And on that note, over there, please say thank you to John and Morgan. And over on the other side, it has been the wonderful Laura.
See you later.
And that's been us, that's been me, that's been you, that's been them, and that's for some unknown reason has been the Clone Wars. We will see you very soon watching something better. Thank you very much and goodbye.